Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary.
The Crit Show contains elements of horror, fantasy violence, and adult language. Content warnings can be found in the episode description.
So, Kim, we haven't got to tell you this tale yet. We had dinner with Mark Cuban last night.
The reaction around the table informs me that I should know who Mark Cuban is.
Oh my gosh.
That's the reaction I had when it was brought up at the table that, oh, there's Mark Cuban. And I was like,
the sandwich guy?
Am I this? Yeah. All I could think of was like the sandwich. And I was like, I feel like I should know who that is, but I don't.
Have you heard of Shark Tank?
Yes.
He's the Shark Tank guy.
Okay. Is he one of the sharks?
Yes. He's like the shark of Shark Tank.
He's the Simon Cowell of Shark Tank.
Okay.
That he's always there. He's always doing it. He's nice or whatever, I think.
Does he also own a basketball team or does he just like basketball?
I feel like he owns a basketball team.
I thought so too, but
I wouldn't
recall.
Be surprised.
I was confused by the name because then somebody said, oh, from Shark Tank. And I was like, oh, is he the host of Shark Tank? But then I realized I was getting him confused with like Mark Summers.
Host of Double Dare?
Yeah, the host of Double Dare. And I was like, no. And then I was like, yeah, oh, no, can't be the same person.
He has an off-Broadway show right now about his life.
That sounds fantastic.
It's just getting ready to open, yeah.
That's wild. Well, so context for everybody. A bunch of NBA stuff is going on downtown Indy. So like a bunch of people are downtown, including rich people, celebrities, owners, possible owners of teams.
He's the minority owner of the Dallas Mavericks.
Oh, okay. Oh,
there
nice.
We go.
So we took Megan out for a birthday dinner at this lovely Aww. Little spot and, we get going and stuff. And I look up and I double take, cause a guy had walked in with two friends and is like looking around. And I was like, that looks just like Mark Cuban, just like Mark Cuban. And we look around and everybody in the restaurant is like staring over as well. And we're like, well, yeah, okay, there he is. That's interesting.
At one point they were like, talking about, like, oh yeah, that's him from Shark Tank, blah, blah, blah. And I looked over and like I have a knowledge of what he looks like. And I looked at Mike. I was like, or it's just someone that like looks a lot like him. As soon as that came out of my mouth, someone was taking a picture with him. And Mike goes, I think that's him.
That's usually a good indication.
Yeah.
And he definitely was delighted with Megan. Because he's literally they're technically two tables away from us, but there were these like small two person tables between us. So I mean, you know, I could have thrown a peanut and easily hit him. Like he was right there. And
Tass can famously
so
only
you did
throw
that
a peanut.
And then you blamed it on Megan.
No. Okay. So everyone's talking around the table like, I think that's him. Yeah, that's him. And just this like air of celebrity is like gathering around, and I'm still kind of confused because I'm like. All old white guys look the same to me. I would never have been able to pick him out of like a lineup, but I'm like, he kind of seems important. And then Rev is sitting across the table from me and he kind of leans in and he whispers, wait, is he one of the ones we're supposed to eat? It was like a slow build of laughter where that joke hit me so right that I couldn't see. I was laughing so hard and so loud.
So the shift of everyone paying attention to the fact that Mark Cuban just sat down shifted to Megan.
Just... And Mark Cuban laughing at her laughing. Yeah.
It was pure joy. It was lovely.
Yeah. And the best part was then, because I had heard this about him before, he got up and he left and I leaned over to somebody. I was like, hey, go check the tip. And as soon as I said that, the waiter went over there and looked down at the table and, like, just stared up at the sky. And, like, people started high-fiving him and hugging. He started to cry.
He was also our server as well. And,
yeah.
And he was just so lovely and just really, really great. So he was going around and, like, everybody was high-fiving him. And we were, like, I was trying to, like, read his lips and figure out, like, how much did he say?
Yeah, and the best was that the guy came back to, like, say goodbye to us, and Jake said something in effect of, I'm sorry, I only left you $12. Yeah.
Tass is like, how much was it? How much did he give you? And the guy holds up like three fingers, like $300. And I was like, yeah. I'm sorry, our tip was $12.
Oh, I thought he said three zeros.
No, he said 300.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Still, pretty good.
Still,
pretty
that's
good,
a great
yeah,
tip. That's a
well yeah. done, Mark.
Yeah, on whatever, two beers or whatever they had.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was weird was that we were there a good 20 minutes before him, and somehow he got his food first.
Well, huh. I mean, were you tipping $300?
We should have verbally promised up front, because I always hear that that goes well, that service workers love it when
oh,
you go,
yeah.
hey, bring my food fast, and I'll give you a really good tip.
We should have said, bring our food first, and Mark Cuban will give you $300.
I almost wanted to tell the waiter when he brought the checks that it's all on our buddy Mark over there.
So be like, Mark Cuban will give you $300. And if he doesn't, let me know, and I'll go get $300 from Mark Cuban.
It then did devolve into us figuring out how to mug Mark Cuban.
Yeah, Jake was like, there's a non-zero chance he sees that Megan is wearing a birthday hat. Oh, I was also wearing a birthday
yeah,
hat, like yeah. a party hat.
Yeah.
He's like, there's a chance that he maybe pays for our meal. And we're like, let's go find him.
So we did, and we would like to thank new listener Mark Cuban for his donation to the
our,
show.
Our new benefactor.
Our newest at the chosen tier, Mark Cuban.
Once a year, we're bringing Mark Cuban out. We're playing a game.
He's going to make us his famous sandwich.
He's going to hear this, and he's going to sue us into the ground. Which won't take much. Yeah. Like,
it won't take very long.
It'll take about $300.
We're yeah. so sorry. We're so sorry. We loved you on Double Dare. Please don't be mad at us.
We'll be like, I'm taking you for all you're worth. It's like, it's less than you tipped at the restaurant. So. All right. This seems like a good opportunity at the start of this session to review our beliefs, goals, and bonds, and maybe earn some grit here.
I'm in. I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Does anybody feel that they have achieved their goal?
I did. I had achieved my goal in the first arc, and then my second goal was kind of to be determined, and I determined over the course of this adventure that my goal was to uncover the identity of Sharpshot, which I did.
Perfect. So you can take a grit for achieving your goal?
Yeah, all the good that did me. He didn't even like me.
You got a grit.
I don't know. I would argue, did you uncover the identity of Sharpshot?
I was present.
Okay, all right. All right. That's true.
Yeah, I know.
She is now privy to the identity of Sharpshot.
Sorry, did I say uncover the identity of Sharpshot? My goal was to get Sharpshot to fall in love with me, so I guess I didn't fulfill that goal.
Oh, no grit. Negative grit. Anybody else feel like they achieved their goal?
I made mine too generic. My goal is just expose evil.
I'd say you did.
We exposed evil.
You've exposed some evil.
Yeah.
I'd say yes, and I think it kind of goes in line with mine. We talked at the beginning of this game about how you and I have very similar like ideas and goals, but they're just kind of reflections of each other.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I would say that I think I have achieved mine in that my belief is not all monsters are monsters, and my goal is to educate the layman, mm-hmm. but I think that I've achieved that with Jumbo.
Oh.
We met Jumbo and, you know, he was working for the mayor and he was like, oh, we got a monster like locked up in the church and we convinced him to let us in there like so that we could kill it to keep everyone safe. Like that was a lie, but mm-hmm. we changed kind of his idea and belief about what this monster was and explained to him who Seth Thales actually was, who Nash was. He's very much gotten on board with the like, well, I want to do what's right, and working with us and Cam, answering questions. I feel very much like his perception of the world and its inhabitants has changed since meeting us.
Mm. Yeah, and I did expose Harrison to like the evil of your thoughts creeping in when you are trying to send something to a god.
Mm, yeah.
I've been sold for a long time.
Okay.
Here.
I still don't have a goal from the last time around. Like, nothing really struck me going into what we were doing.
Ooh, that's interesting because the rules do say you have one session to write a new goal, but they don't tell me what the penalty is if you haven't in that one session.
What if I have something that I want to happen, but it's completely out of my hands. It's not something I can work towards. That probably doesn't count.
That doesn't feel like a goal.
Yeah, all right.
I think you just don't get to play anymore.
All right.
I think
your character dies.
Yeah. I wish you would have told me this when you were teetering over a precipice.
One of your humors gets too strong and you have to get more yellow bile. Or
yeah, yeah.
And you get too funny. That's what that means, right?
Yes.
My goal is to have a new goal by the next time we play.
Boo. Mm. What's your belief again?
That this world shall not fall to Nash's influence.
So what's another actionable thing you could do based on that belief? Like, your last one was to destroy his circle. Do you widen the net a little bit? Like, Rev was talking about how his was too vague, but he was still a thing to accomplish, and he accomplished it in an assortment of ways. Is it, you know, less specific than destroy a magic circle, but is it similar? Like, expose a truth to a particular person or a particular group or a truth about somebody or something like that.
The thing that comes to mind, we've sure blown right past, which is suddenly the realization of that idea of, like, making sure that anyone that was in on this and can assist with defending and or recreating these circles is dealt with so that they can't. We've sure left at least one guy behind that was watching that stuff.
Yeah, you'd have to turn the train around.
Yep. Here's the thing. We do have to turn the train around, though. We've got to get back to the point we got in, and there are mountains in our way right now.
That's true.
We have to go all the way back around to go home. We've got to pretty much make through all the stuff we've run away from.
Yeah, so, I mean, you could add like a postscript mission on here to go back and deal with Dales.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think for the immediate goal, it is shifting more towards personnel here. You know, Nash's people. So, like, work against his monsters, his loyalists, you know, anything that he has set up, help to undermine that in this world.
Okay.
I think I have a new one in mind.
Nice.
Kind of moving on from exposing the idea that not all monsters are monsters. Now that we're going into, like, monster territory, I think my new goal is going to be assist any of the quote-unquote monsters in Lost Hope that might need it, you know, that aren't necessarily just evil because they live in evil monster town. They might, you know, be being restrained here against their will or utilized by Nash or I don't know, anything. I guess it's just kind of keeping an eye out for anyone being treated unfairly or utilized because of what they are.
I think I'm going to have mine be, because the thing that they've discussed with us is that the monsters seem to keep coming. So I want to find out where they're coming from. Like, are they just reproducing, or is there something over here that's, like, letting them out? Are they crawling out of a hole in space or what?
All right.
Gosh, it's funny because I was so wrapped up in Sharpshot, the mystique of Sharpshot, that I didn't even really get to know him. I think my goal is to, like, make a genuine connection with somebody in this world.
Okay, fabulous. And then does anybody feel like they have resolved their bond with another character?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that almost more than usual, like, very by the book on all of our parts. Like, we stayed in our lanes is the wrong way to say that, but
stuck,
you know,
to our strengths.
Yeah, we stuck to our strengths and we acted as advertised, I guess.
We were so efficient together. We skipped over the entire mystery.
We skipped over, like, a whole maybe boss fight that we just didn't have to do.
You certainly did. All right, so rack up any newly accrued grit. This is also a good opportunity if anybody wants to pay their 5 grit to do any of the quote-unquote level up things, like buying a new skill, buying a specialist skill, adding +1 to a skill, permanently overcoming character's issue, etc. Now would be a good time. I don't know what kind of grit everybody's got in the bank, though. Has anybody got 5 grit?
Nope.
Mm-mm.
Not yet. Yeah, I'm going to spend all 5 of mine right now, actually. I'm going to go up a weird level.
Nice. What's that bring you to?
4.
Yay! Join me at 4.
Very good. Let's return to your journey. The train's chugging along out of the Jackalope Flats towards Lost Hope. The day's getting fairly long. It's getting close to evening as you approach the border. And you can see from a distance that it looks like the trains run through another outpost, like Fort Ghost Hollow. But even from a distance, and especially as you get closer, you can see that there's nobody there. There's no movement. There is no presence. As you reach the edge of this outpost town, it's abandoned, and it's in terrible shape. You can see buildings that have collapsed slightly. You can see cloth that is just drifting and dangling, bleached by the sun and shredded by the wind. It doesn't seem like this has been manned in quite some time. But the tracks are still navigable, and the train is able to pass through this broken outpost and into Lost Hope proper. The landscape out here is bleak, and getting bleaker every minute as the sun goes down. Overall, you are met by similar sights, off in the distance either side of the tracks. Occasionally, you see a structure, and you can tell it's a ghost town. It's destroyed. It's dilapidated. You know that Lost Hope has a reputation for not playing host to normal people, for lack of a better word. Out here are the creatures, the beasts, and the monstrous. You know it'll be a couple of days, again, by train to get to the center of the radius, about the point that Rev thinks you should begin your search. Does anybody have anything in particular they're doing on this train ride? Or even just on this, like, first night?
Overall, trying to take it easy so that I finish off healing my ribs. And beyond that, more or less glued to one of the windows, just looking for, you know, anything that might be trying to get ahead of us, following us.
I think I've been in my workshop. I've been thinking about what Tass had said about using magic to make some sort of rune finder, something that can help us, like, narrow down where this is going to be, especially since, you know, we know it's going to be really tiny, and we don't necessarily have all the time in the world to look over every inch of a much bigger circle. So, yeah, I'm trying to figure out if there's some way I can engineer something to work in tandem with magic to be able to help us kind of dowsing rod our way to where the rune is.
Yeah, I think that I would actually try to join Megan and help with that, because the knowledge of the rune and, like, oh, hey, this is a rune that would be in the, like, the next spell, and just that idea of creating some other options for it to track.
Let's start there then, because that is something actionable that I think you could get moving on right away. So this seems like an excellent opportunity to use the gadgeteer move. So again, when you build a new gadget, describe its function, which you have already more or less done, at least what you want it to accomplish. How do you imagine it does this task? Like, what exactly is the thing? What is the gadget, and how does it operate to help you find these runes?
You know those maze games you used to play as a kid, where it's like a little disc and then it's got a maze in it and then a bunch of, like, little, like, the little balls, the little metal balls, and then you move it around and they swing around?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that, except it's not exactly a maze. There's just kind of lines in there to help the balls go in certain directions. And as you walk around with it, they all move, not because of the gravity of whatever angle you're holding the disc at, but as you kind of get closer to magical runes. Like, it might not know exactly what rune it is, but it's like, hey, there's some source of power being drawn here, and they all just kind of, like, tilt that way, almost like a compass.
Okay. So it'll pull you to, like, any individual magical rune.
Yeah.
All right. I think this is feasible. I don't think this is going to require much in terms of money or resources, because this is simple materials. It's just a complex magical task. So I think the resources is just the knowledge and abilities your team has. As for time, how long do we think this would take?
I don't know. I mean, if I'm already starting with something similar, like a compass, you know, and having, like, a bunch of, you know, little metal ball bearings or something, I think makes sense to have in my workshop. I think I have a lot of the resources already. It would mostly just be attuning it, I guess, to the magic. I don't have to spend a lot of time building it.
Sure. So then this might be more of a Rev question, because I imagine you'd be responsible for the runes and the, like, creating the link here and stuff. How long do you think your part of this would require?
I imagine that it's either filling the little metal balls with magic or carving, like, a tiny rune on them.
The tiniest little bit of rune.
Aww. Yeah, like when they laser print on a single piece of rice or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah, that's cool.
So either way, probably, like, the better part of a day at least, if it's casting a bunch of different spells on them and kind of trial and error to see what connects to the magic, or carving things to make it attracted to magic.
Okay. unfortunately, TASS has changed my mind on what materials are needed. You're going to need to find a laser etcher in this world.
Perfect.
I thought you were going to say you're going to have to find rice.
Or we're going to vastly increase the amount of time this takes. You're going to need a pair of reading glasses, and you're going to have to get like way down in there on those.
Can I use
guys.
A charge from the workshop to have a laser etcher?
Why not?
Why? Yeah, that's something that's probably available.
Let's just get another automaton that'll do it for us.
Yeah, a different gadgeteer role to build a tiny automaton to etch your rice.
I just like pour them into Cruz's mouth and he just kind of chews a bit and spits them out and they're carved on.
There's like a blender noise. Cruz don't got a mouth though, I think. That's one of the few physical things I have certainly established.
I'll make him one.
You're going to have to put him in a different orifice. Cruz doesn't have a butthole either. He's a waist up guy. He's in a pedestal.
He's a waist up guy.
Waist up guy is going to be the name of this episode.
He's like the creepy barbershop quartet that was in that spooky game, Megan, that we played. Yeah.
All waist.
It was just like the torsos of androids on just like microphone stands.
Yeah, basically.
It was also, it wasn't David Tennant in the Chris Pratt stuck on a spaceship with
Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence.
Gardens of Passengers.
Yeah.
Michael Sheen was the...
Yeah, Michael Sheen, who was the bartender, was just a waist-up guy.
Yeah.
Just a waist-up guy.
That sounds like a compliment.
And an insult at the same time.
Akin to a real stand-up guy.
Yeah.
You're a real waist-up guy.
You're a real waist-up guy. It's like, is that good? Is that bad? I don't know.
Megan, go ahead and give me an engineering roll, plus mind, plus engineering.
11.
Okay. So the gadget will work more or less as planned. We'll just need to spend the time here, but you get right to work. TASS, as you are resting and recuperating, I imagine in the sleeper car.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Some hours go by, you know, the sun sets, it gets dark out. You are keeping watch, and you do feel like your body is sufficiently healed. You can remove that penalty.
Woo!
But I do want you to give me an awareness roll here. Just like a use a skill roll with awareness to keep watch.
Okay. That's an 11.
Nice.
You are peering out the window. Hard to make much out in like this dark and dilapidated landscape. There aren't really any sources of light out there as far as you can tell. But you do hear a muffled thump on the top of your train car.
Oh, come on. I'm just going to yell down the corridor, y'all. Something thumped on the train. I'm going to check it out.
It could be Cam.
It could be Cam. It could be a lot of things. Can't wait.
Here's an idea. Let's all jump off the train. And then jump back on the train.
Oh, that's pretty good. I'm gonna try to get eyes first.
That's
fair. But I like this. And I'll go out, you know, between the cars and... as slow and easy as I can, try to peek and see if there's anything there.
Okay, you climb up the ladder between cars and peek over the top, and you see a figure standing on top of the sleeper car that you were just in. It looks like a humanoid figure, fairly lithe. They appear to be wearing like a frock coat that is billowing in the wind rushing by the train. They've got on like a gambler's hat that they're holding a hand on to make sure it does not blow away. And they are down on one knee, like looking at the surface of the train car.
I am gonna watch him for a second if he hasn't spotted me and just see, like, what is he doing? What is he trying to accomplish here? Is he spying on us? Is he hoping to get our attention? Is he getting ready to, you know, start shooting through the roof? Like, what does it look like he's up to?
Why don't you read a situation?
Okay.
Plus mind, plus awareness.
9.
Do you have any grit and anything you want to invoke?
I have 1 grit. I think I'm going to invoke my new goal, if I can do that. Just, I'm trying to gauge if this is somebody that's after us, if this is another one of Nash's people that means us harm, and like get a vibe on what they're trying to accomplish.
Okay. Go ahead and spend that grit, and that'll bump you up to a 10. Which gets you 3 questions.
Okay. What's my enemy's true position?
You see that with their free hand, they are running their fingers like kind of gingerly over the surface of the car, like maybe looking for like dents or flaws or joints. It seems like they're trying to like assess the structure of that car. Like maybe they're looking for a way through it.
Oof. Okay. What should I be on the lookout for?
It's tough to make out a lot of detail, you know, in the dark and considering how this person is dressed. But for a moment, the moon is unblocked by clouds and you get a little bit of extra light and you see them smile like maybe they found what they're looking for and you see fangs.
Cool. Who's in control here? Part of me is wondering, is this the only one here? Like, is there any indication of this person doing this joyfully? Do they have a Nash sticker
badge
on their lapel? Yeah, like, I don't know.
He just smiled.
Yeah. Well, I'd want to get in, too.
We've made friends with vampires before.
Maybe they're good and they smiled because they couldn't find any weaknesses and they were happy we were safe.
They're like, well done. Swoosh.
You see them pull a pocket watch out of their waistcoat and consult the time, which gives you the impression that they are waiting for a cue and they're not the one giving it.
I'm going to take a shot.
Okay. Remind me, were the pistols themselves blessed?
Yes.
You fire a shot and it plugs this figure and they are rocked backwards and do like a couple of backwards somersaults with the movement of the train before you see a hand come out and get purchase, and they look up at you, and this woman has terror in her eyes as she starts to turn to mist. Inside the train, moments after Tass steps outside to investigate, you hear a shot ring out up above. Kim, what do you want to do?
I'm going to exit the parlor car and get on top of the train and try to see where Tass is.
Okay. Kim, you climb up at the back of the parlor car.
Were you just shooting something?
Vampire! Missed! Yes!
What?
Right there! Right sort of there!
Kim and Tass both, you see this mist filtering through some of the gaps in the plates of the car and making its way inside the train.
Ah, darn! And I'm gonna slide back down and get in.
Yeah, me too.
Rev and Megan, what are you two up to?
I mean, Tass said I'm gonna go check it out. And then we hear a gunshot, so I assume we'd probably pretty quickly go investigate how south things went.
Yeah.
So are you heading towards the front of the train on the inside, or are you also like getting outside from your car and checking out the top?
I think I would be going inside.
Yeah.
We're like, fuck that.
Yeah.
That sounds scary.
I'm not going to get on top of the train and try to make it to it.
It's moving.
That's dangerous.
There's a walkway right here. It's nice.
Okay. You two hustle in the direction of the front of the train, and you throw open the door between cars and are looking down the barrel of a shotgun.
Whoa!
The figure behind the shotgun is a big guy with big mutton chops, sort of hefty. He's wearing like a black open crown hat. And like a capelet almost, like an Inverness cape that the shotgun is just kind of emerging from the opening in. And he says, now where are y'all going in such a hurry?
As soon as we come through the door and see this, my hands are just kind of up and taking a half step back towards Rev. Oh, we were just passing through on our train. Who are you?
That's not much important. I don't reckon y'all need to know our names. You just settle back in. Don't make any trouble. This'll be over sooner than later, and we'll be on our way.
What are you here for? We don't really have much. There's some fancy booze in the parlor, but that's it.
He tips his hat with his empty hand and says,
much obliged for the tip. I'll relieve you of that, too, while we're here.
Yeah, I think also just hands in the air a bit and, like, starting to get on the ground. And when I place my hands on the ground, I want to try to channel some magic through the ground at him.
Okay, well, this is a creature of your own size, so that will be weird level 3.
Okay. 11.
All right, how does this manifest?
I've been working with runes a bunch the last couple of days, and I've been using a lot of force magic, so I just imagine a rune inscribing underneath him and just blasting him up into the ceiling.
Okay.
Kind of like when people would sit on an airbag.
Yes. Yeah, perfect. That's exactly what I was envisioning. This guy just rockets up into the roof of this train car and comes back down hard on his belly. The shotgun discharges and punches a hole through the side of the workshop car.
Sorry.
Tass and Kim, you both come back down from the surface of the train and open the doors to your respective compartments. Kim, in the parlor, Jumbo has stood up and is like looking out a window. He looks at you as you enter. What in the world's going on out there?
Vampire trying to board the train.
Oh, hell. Tass, as you open the door to the sleeper car, you see that mist coalescing into a form that appears to just be laid out on the ground, clutching a wound.
I'm gonna approach with both of my guns leveled down at her. Tell me how many people are coming. You might survive this.
Tass, why don't you roll influence? Because you are trying to get them to do what you want by, in this case, I would say, intimidating.
Okay.
So that is plus soul, plus intimidate. And as a reminder, you can alternatively use your fame or infamy in place of your soul plus skill, if fictionally appropriate, but I feel like this would be.
Okay. I'm gonna do that. Do I have to spend anything to do that?
Nope.
Okay. Thank God. Thank God. Using that puts me at a 7.
She winces and she says,
how many of you's on this train?
I tell you, you answer me.
Sure.
5. 9 if you count the horses.
Well, not counting the horses, I reckon this'll be a mighty even fight.
And behind her, the door to that car opens, and you see 2 figures standing there. They look like twins, somewhat young, maybe around 19, 20-ish. They both have kind of long, greasy hair, bird-like features. They're very spindly, and each has a menacing-looking knife in hand.
Well, the knives plus her giving you up by saying it'll be an even fight means I don't think we're going to have much of a conversation here, folks. And I'm going to start shooting.
All right. Give me a shoot roll.
Okay. 12.
Which one do you pop? The one on the left or the one on the right?
One on the left. Feels more natural, like I'm reading. I'm just going to just go right in natural order here.
Okay. You hit the one on the left and you see that like sinister grin on their face, again, just turn suddenly to shock and terror at the impact, no pun intended, that this gunshot has had on them. And a hand comes up to the wound very quickly, and the other twin looks at the wound and looks at their sibling's face. And the woman on the ground yells, Fitchburg, run! And the one that is not yet injured, like, again, looks at you with wide eyes in a panic, while the one that you shot tumbles backwards just clean through the door into the parlor car.
I yell after them, yes, run, go, please, I implore you.
You see the one still standing turn into a bat and fly back out of the train car.
Good choice.
Kim, in the parlor car with Jumbo, you hear another gunshot, and a figure falls backwards through the door at the front of the car.
What is happening?
More of them!
Yeah, but why?
Nothing good!
Is that figure, like, alive?
Yes, they look like they're in a tremendous amount of pain, but they are alive. They start scooting backwards away from where they fell, and then you see like their chin tilt all the way up so that they're looking back at you upside down, and then they start scooting back towards the gap between cars instead.
Wait, 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 no, no, hold on, come back here. I want to try to get a hand on them and see a vision of, like, their past. What are they doing here?
Okay, you rush forward and put a hand on this person. The closest thing to you is the top of their head. You just feel their greasy hair on your palm. How specific do you want these visions to be? Do you want them to be short but vague? Do you want them to be short but detailed?
Short but detailed.
Short but detailed is max level. That's level 7.
Oh, sorry. No, I meant, I just want short but not vague.
Okay. Then we're going to go weird at level 5.
Sounds good. 11.
You see a first person perspective through their eyes. You're looking at a woman who seems to be giving orders. She is wearing a smart herringbone waistcoat and a gray cattleman hat. You can see that she has twin revolvers and holsters on her hips that she is resting her hands on, except for when she's pointing at the individual she's talking to. She says, Adolin, you make your way in the sleeper car. Get anybody caught unawares. Red, start off closer to the back. Make your way forward. Clinton Fitchburg, you breach near the middle. I'll come in from the front. One way or another, we'll pinch this son of a bitch. And your vision fades as you look again towards the front of the car, towards Tass, and see this woman slowly opening the door from the dining car behind him.
The Crit Show is a Crit Show Studios production, edited and produced by Brandon Wentz, with music by Jake Purley. You can find more information about us at thecritshowpodcast.com. To keep up to date with upcoming live shows, contests, and other special events, follow us at The Crit Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. For even more weekly content, join us at patreon.com/thecritshow.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
When Kilner accepted the job of smuggling escaped heiress Samantha Trapp across the galaxy, she expected the job to be over and done with quickly. But now they're stuck with each other and they have a job to do.
Think of Automnicon as a sort of student loan company. You take a loan from them, and then they own you until you've paid it off, with interest.
So all I have to do is pay off my debt? Fine, I can do that. How much do I owe?
900,027 credits. And counting.
You're stuck here, with me, to work it off.
We Fix Space Junk is a sci-fi sitcom from Battlebird Productions, featuring Travelling by Cryo.
Don't worry if you feel like you're drowning. That's perfectly normal. Wait, what?
Aliens from across the galaxy.
Greetings, visitors.
Is that popcorn?
Hello, Your Excellency.
AIs.
Dad, how do I do air?
You're already doing it automatically. Calm down.
And, of course, thrilling and exciting missions in outer space.
Hello, valued employees. Here are the details for your next exciting mission. You will be repairing a
device redacted
in or at the
location redacted.
We Fix Space Junk is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Subscribe, consume, integrate, indoctrinate, assimilate, degenerate, and watch your body decay into a faceless husk as your mind floats aimlessly in space. Register your interest with Automnicon now.